Hey, it's Becca.
It's Nancy.
It's Brixie.
And this is
Insane Investigations.
Hey, investigators.
Today we're going to be covering an Irish case because we haven't done one in a really long time. We did say in the last episode it was going to be a light episode, but it's not.
Becca lied.
I lied, I'm sorry. I hadn't decided yet, and then I happened to pick probably like one of the worst things that ever happened to this country. But it's a true crime podcast. What could you really expect? Yeah. So
Nancy's back.
Nancy's back. Welcome back.
In case
back.
You didn't hear my annoying little voice in the background.
We missed you last week. It was really weird.
Oh, I missed you guys too. But fair play, you've done really, really well on the episode, I have to say.
Thank you.
I loved it.
So before we jump into it, we just want to give you a couple of quick reminders. We're 13 followers away from 100 on Spotify, so we're getting really, really close. So we're starting to gather things for our little giveaway once we hit 100. So if you haven't already, make sure that you do.
And then also, if you haven't followed us on Patreon, make sure you go ahead and do that if you want to have early release to our episodes. And also, we are trying to work on bonus content for our Patreon subscribers.
Yeah.
I think they are Patreons.
Patreons, yeah.
Yeah. Well, whatever. You know, become one of them.
Yeah.
Support our cause.
Support the cause. We do have some really, really good ideas on what we want to do for the Patreon. So hopefully we can kind of get some of those going soon enough.
Yeah. And also, we are posting daily on our Instagram. If you don't see the post, check the story, because occasionally there will be a quiz which is posted on the story instead. But yeah, it's a year of true crime, so there's something a bit different every day. Taken in what looks like it probably could be a murder house, but it's just my house.
AKA Brinksy's gaff.
It's definitely a house of horrors. Just not for the reasons you'd expect. So yeah, like our posts and our stories, and yeah, check us out.
And follow us on all of our socials if you haven't already, because that way it'll be easier to see them every day. So before we go into the actual case, we just wanted to give a shout out to a journalist that Alan knows. So another shout out to Alan, two episodes in a row.
Yeah.
He's on a roll.
He's proven himself useful lately.
He really is. So Alan knows a journalist who wrote a few different articles about the Magdalen Laundries. So we just want to give a shout out to Conal O'Fatarta. I did my best.
We're very sorry.
We're very sorry.
You should know by now we can't pronounce.
We can't do
anything.
We can't do names.
No.
The articles are in our episode description if you want to give it a go at pronouncing it yourself. But I haven't got a hope. Best of luck to you. So the Magdalen Laundries, if nobody has heard about them before, they're basically women's homes run by the Roman Catholic Church. They started in the UK, but they kind of spread all over the world. And Ireland was actually pretty much run by the Catholic Church until very recently.
Yeah.
So when I was doing the research, I just asked my mom if she had any kind of insight into the Magdalen Laundries, or if she knew any information that maybe I wouldn't find online. So she kind of was able to set the scene of what Ireland was like. So I'm just going to read her message to kind of explain what living in Ireland was like. So she said, pretty much everybody was afraid of the Catholic Church. And if you had sex before you were married, you were pretty much told that you were definitely going to hell. My mom was kind of born like in the 70s, and even in her generation, like that's what she was told. Like if you had sex before you were married, that's it. Like you have no hope. And if you were having sex, you definitely weren't supposed to like it as a woman.
Oh no. Yeah.
You were supposed to be ashamed of yourself. Even when you were married and had kids, like you had to act ashamed. Do you know the way back then people used to say that sex was only for having kids?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So women actually had to be, quote, churched, forgiven after giving birth before they were allowed to get Holy Communion again, because they had to be forgiven for the sin of giving birth.
It's your job to have children, but that is also a sin.
Yeah.
So she basically said then that the church was the all-powerful and dictated basically who was good and who was bad. And apparently if you hid your sin well enough and brushed it all under the carpet, it was okay. And as well as that, they used to say that if your baby passed away before they were christened, they weren't allowed into heaven.
And that is horrible.
Yeah, they used to say that they went into limbo and their souls drifted forever between heaven and hell.
Imagine being a parent losing a child in that time, and that's what everyone told you, like, was going to happen to your baby.
It's fucked. So that's basically what Ireland was like outside the Magdalene laundries, never mind what we're going to get into when we talk about inside the walls of these places. The first Magdalene laundry was founded in Dublin in 1765 by Lady Arabella Denny. The intent of the asylum was to prevent prostitution, and it sheltered what was called fallen women at the time. We'll get into the term fallen women and how that kind of changed over the years in a bit, but that's kind of, it was a home for fallen women, people used to say. Mm-hmm. So the idea was that they would help these women get back on the correct moral path, and majority of the staff would have been nuns, so it was pretty much just run by the church. Whilst they were there, women were expected to cook and clean, as well as sew clothing and work in the actual laundry. They wouldn't be paid for any of the work because it was considered part of their penitence for their discretions that landed them in there. When the institution first opened, it seemed like it was going to be quite a popular option for women who had been, quote, led astray. Women were checking themselves into these places to like seek help and try to be better and stuff. So pretty popular in the beginning. A lot of parents were even sending their daughters there to hide unwed pregnancies, and their daughters would stay there and work until they gave birth. And then sometimes they would return to their family and pretend that none of it ever happened. Later on and down the years, they were sometimes never let leave. A lot of the babies would be given up for adoption so that the parents of the women would be able to make sure nobody ever found out. Unfortunately, some of those babies weren't so lucky, and they were sent to different like mother and baby homes and orphanages and stuff around the country. And a lot of them didn't survive. We'll get more into that later on. But initially, the asylum had started off with a pretty good impression in Dublin, and more laundries opened all over the country. However, it became clearer and clearer that what happened behind the walls of the convent was much darker than it appeared, and it quickly changed from a place for women to rehabilitate themselves and return home to a prison with a life sentence.
So Becca mentioned earlier that the laundries were open to shelter fallen women, which, like we were saying, like, isn't really a term that you hear nowadays. So we actually had to look into what exactly they meant by fallen women. So historically, the term referred to women who had disobeyed the word of God and lost their innocence. The term fallen referred to the story of Adam and Eve, specifically to Eve eating the forbidden fruit and falling from the Garden of Eden. So the laundries opened in the 18th century, but by the 19th century, Victoria morality had been on the rise, and the term fallen women began to only include women who were promiscuous or had a child out of wedlock. So women who committed crimes such as premarital sex, because that's a crime back then, were all considered social pariahs. The desire the Catholic Church had to keep these women out of the public eye is what led to the opening of these religious homes for women who had sinned. This was the work around the church wanting these women out of the public eye while also maintaining Christian charity. At the time of the opening of the laundries, Ireland was in a moral panic about sex and chastity. Traditional Roman Catholic values were at the forefront of Ireland's culture and beliefs, and as a country, sex seemed to be feared, which was basically kind of what Rebecca's mom was saying as well when she was telling us, even when she was growing up, which
was much later.
That'll tell you how long this is going on for. So when these institutions showed up, it was like the Irish people saw hope for redemption and ran straight into the fire without a second thought. And this resulted in 2 centuries of Irish women being forced out of their homes and into the hands of the Catholic Church, where they were forced into free labour and various forms of abuse.
There was so many stories out there about Mary Magdalene and who she was, and a big question people have about the laundries is, why are they called the Magdalene laundries? Well, Mary of Magdalene, or the Magdalene, is known in the Bible as a woman who traveled with Jesus and witnessed his crucifixion and resurrection. Her name came from her hometown, Magdala, and many surnames are derived from the place you were born. Some believe that she may have been Jesus' wife and that they even had children together, but it hasn't been proved. Like a lot of history that far back, there isn't a lot of information that can be taken as fact, but she was rumoured to be his wife. Back then, demons were believed to be the cause of many physical and psychological illnesses, and it is said that Jesus exorcised 7 demons out of Mary Magdalene, leading her to be referred to in the Bible as the woman whom the 7 demons had gone out. Much later in the year 591, Pope Gregory described Mary Magdalene as a sinful woman who anointed Jesus' feet. As he said this in his Easter sermon, a widespread belief began that Mary had been a prostitute. More talk began to spread of Mary's wealth and beauty as many Protestants refused to accept the identification of Mary as a prostitute or promiscuous woman. During the Catholic Revival in 1545, the Catholic Church emphasized Mary's image as a symbol of penance. In 1969, Pope Paul VI removed the identification that Mary Magdalene had been a sinful woman from the general Roman calendar, but the view of her as a prostitute has remained in public culture to this day. The insinuation of Mary's life and the sins she may or may not have committed led to her namesake, the Magdalene Laundries.
The laundries were run by Catholic nuns, and the state helped to pay for them in exchange for laundry services. The state also helped the laundries by sending mentally ill patients from hospitals into their institutions for reformation. Whilst working in the laundries, the nuns vowed to reform the incarcerated women using harsh methods. No one really seemed to understand the severity of how serious they were in saying this. Women would be checked in usually by family members, be it parents or husbands, and would be forced to work for hours of unpaid labour. And working for no pay would be the highlight of their time there. While there, women would be forced to wash and iron clothes, and if they refused, the nuns would withhold food or physically abuse them. The abuse ranged from women starving and being left in cold conditions with no heating, and they were under constant surveillance by the nuns. They were basically kind of just left to live in filth. Like, they weren't given like anything to like wash themselves with or
basic hygiene.
Yeah. They were just kind of left there.
Good old Catholic charity or what?
Yeah, good old Catholic charity. When they were fed, it was mostly just bread and water, and they had almost no contact with the outside. If they were allowed to write letters and stuff, they'd be supervised while they were writing letters. And if their families came to visit them, like, there would have to be like a nun present. Nuns would even humiliate them by shaving their heads and putting them in solitary confinement if they thought that they were misbehaving enough, I guess.
Prisoners get better treatment. Like, you go to jail and you get better treatment than that.
Yeah, literally. You can go kill someone.
Yeah.
And be cruising in prison in comparison to what these women went through.
Yeah. Well, actually, no. We say you. Men could go kill someone and be treated better than a woman that happened to get pregnant outside of marriage.
Yeah. It was just, once you got in there, it was just a constant cycle of physical and verbal abuse.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't feel like a person anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how long do you think that this went on for? Go on, we'll give you a second. Take a guess.
Take a little guess.
Take a guess. I know, it sounds horrific. How long? 10, 15, 20 years? Well, if your guess was 231, you were correct. Yeah.
Like, that makes me so angry.
I know.
Yep.
231 years this shit went on for. So, that's obviously a long, long, long time for such abuse to be happening. And not only just to be happening, but to actually be run with state funding and support. Like, this shit was legal. This was legal abuse.
Literally, like, the state would be like, oh, you've a mentally ill child? Send them in there, they're great.
Yeah.
And that'd be it.
And that would be it. So, however, the institutions continue to grow and basically torture women because they were being run by a religious order. So like we were saying, the church controlled everything in this country, basically. Yeah. Like everything. And the women who managed to escape imprisonment and spoke out about it were usually dismissed. Ireland very much believed whatever the church told them. It was very recent when the church stopped having control over a lot of things in Ireland. So like speaking out about the church or accusing them of anything sinful really was a big no-no. And I think it was literally, I want to say like the 90s or something when they started like laying off.
Yeah, I think it was like the 80s or 90s.
When Ema was telling me about Colonel's articles, so hi Ema, she actually said like the story broke in the 90s and it was just like a tiny little article and somewhere in the back of the paper, no one really cared about it. But when the story broke in the 2000s, when Colonel wrote about it, it was front page news.
It blew up.
Which just kind of shows the difference in attitude in the space of like a decade or two.
Yeah, I think, we definitely came a long way.
Yeah, I think it was when the film The Magdalene Sisters came out. That came out in 2002. It's kind of, it was, I don't know if the characters in it were actual people or not, but it was basically based off what it was like in there. So I think when that came out, that kind of, like you were saying, it shocked
like the
people.
Whole thing, sorry, this is sidebar. The boy in the striped pajamas. Because I feel like you learn about all that stuff, but actually watching that movie, like they showed us that in primary school.
This is why...
And I'm still traumatized to this day.
In secondary school watching it.
This is why I prefer dramatizations over documentaries, because documentaries is just people telling me what happened, but dramatization, I can see
what
happened.
You can actually...
Happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, you get the feels watching it
definitely
happen.
Yeah. 100%, I agree. So anyways, going back to the 231 years of the Magdalene Laundries being a thing in Ireland. Yeah, so basically anyone who, you know, came out and had anything bad to say about the church or accusing them of, you know, doing bad things or anything like that, society just kind of wrote them off as, you know, crazy people or liars, and just the institutions just continued taking people in. So things just went on. They were just completely dismissed, basically.
Yeah.
And most of the survivors didn't say anything, though. They knew better than to speak up and be called crazy. So they just tried to just get on with their lives and leave it at that.
Yeah, like, there wasn't really a choice back then. Like, now, if something like that happened to you and you spoke up, like, there are still people out there that'd be like, oh, you're a bullshitter, oh, you're a liar. But there's people there to support and believe you. Where back then...
The whole country was being run by the church.
Yeah. Like, so what they said went, basically.
It was like a cult.
Yeah. And like, who are you going to speak up to when literally the whole country is run by the people that's doing it to you?
Everyone was brainwashed.
And like, it was, like we were saying, like, it was up to extremely recently. Like, my mom's fella lived in the flat close to the last Magdalene Laundry that was open when he was a kid. And I can't remember if it was one of his brothers or one of his uncles, like, fancied one of the girls in there, and he used to throw cigarettes over the wall to her.
Those cigarettes probably made that girl's day. Yeah.
Probably. That was probably, like, the only thing that kept her going.
The only interaction she had with another human being on the outside.
Just over the wall to somebody. Like,
it's just so messed up. Like, even it blows my mind when I found out that there was no, like, contraception wasn't even a thing until the 90s. Like, somewhere, I don't know what it was, like, the mid-90s. It was, like, very, like, literally just a couple of years before I was born.
Yeah, it was late enough. I think my mom used to say that, like, family from England used to send condoms over here in the post.
Yeah.
Because you couldn't get it here.
Back then. Like, look, we have come a long way. Like, we have come a really long way. But I think in comparison to, like, the rest of the world, if the church maybe didn't have as much of an influence as it did, we probably would be more caught up with other countries, because there's other countries that are far ahead. Like, it still took us a while to bring in, like, abortion laws and all the rest. Like, that was all quite recent for us. So there hasn't been a confirmed number of women who went to the Magdalene Laundries over the 200 years that they were opened. However, it's estimated that around 300,000 women have passed through the institutions over the years in Ireland alone, which is a lot. There have also been reported laundries in the UK, Australia and other countries as well. So this wasn't something that was limited to just Ireland.
But 300,000 people in such a small country.
On
an island.
On an island, yeah.
Yeah.
Insane.
Women would be imprisoned behind locked doors and the windows would be too high to reach and barred from the outside. Once they had entered the laundries, a lot of women were given new names and identification numbers. It's like fucking Auschwitz.
Yeah.
They would have had their hair cut and given a uniform, they would not be allowed to have their own clothes back. Any contact with the outside was surveilled by nuns. No correspondence went out, and if someone came to visit an inmate, they were watched constantly by nuns, like Nancy said earlier. Friendships were forbidden, and there was usually a rule that everyone had to be silent in place at all times. Speaking at all about your family or home was strictly forbidden.
So they weren't even allowed to speak amongst themselves, like just about their life or about who they are as people. Like literally treated worse than prisoners.
Yeah. They were just to be silent.
Yeah. It's literally like a concentration camp.
Yeah. Except I think even in concentration camps, they were allowed to talk to one another to some extent.
That's like,
obviously, look, I can't compare it to, both of them were horrific in their own ways, in their own right, but there are definitely some similarities for sure.
Yeah.
The women had to work from day to night in the laundries, either cleaning, sewing, washing, or ironing clothes for the public. They also provided laundry services for businesses as well. For example, the Chief State Solicitor's Office, the Office of Public Works, and Aras on
Uachtaráin.
Thank you. Punishments for refusing to do any of the work included solitary confinement, kneeling for hours, humiliation rituals, physical and emotional abuse. None of the girls received an education either while there. They were also never told if or when they would be released. Attempts to escape were usually a failure. Women who did get out often were caught by the Gardaí and returned to the laundries. Punishment for this was normally to transfer you to another laundry.
That's so fucked up. Like, imagine getting out and thinking, like, oh, like, I'm free. And then a guard finds you and brings you straight back.
Yeah.
Just to move you to a different laundry.
Yeah.
If you did get released, it was with no warning, and they would leave with just the clothes on their back. Many fled the country as soon as they could.
Yeah, I would be out of here.
Yeah.
So before we get into how the laundries were closed, we're just going to talk about a few people who were in the Magdalen laundries and did manage to get out and go on to live their lives. So the first one we're going to talk about is Mary Smith. She was actually born in one of the laundries and adopted out of a mother and baby home. But unfortunately, Mary would be 16 by the time she returned to the laundries. After being raped, Mary was sent there where the nuns cut her hair and gave her a new name. While there, she had a similar experience to most women who ended up in the laundries, and she was forced to follow a vow of silence while working in the laundry, and nuns would beat her regularly. Mary stated that she felt like she wasn't even a human being while she was being kept there.
And she was raped as well, so it's not even like she just, you know, was frisky and was a sinner or whatever the hell they wanted to refer to them as back then. Like,
she was like, just,
she was abused.
Abused. And then against sent her to control be and
abused.
Yeah.
A quote from Mary is, "We were worse than humans. We used to have to line up and they used to make us hold our hands, and the nuns would say after me, I am a nobody, I am a nobody, I am a nobody. They used to keep telling us to say that, I am a nobody."
Oh my God, what brainwashing. Like, imagine after a matter of time of doing that all the time, you'll start believing that.
Well, it's an affirmation.
Yeah.
Like, people in mental health now, people say to do positive affirmations in the mirror to help yourself, because if you say it enough, you'll believe it. So it works the other way around as well.
Your self-esteem would just be
gone.
Tanked. Yeah.
Yeah. Another woman was named Elizabeth Coppin, and she was 2 years old when her stepfather beat her and the government sent her to an asylum. She was to be a ward of the court until she was 16. However, she was 19 before she saw the outside of a laundry again. While she was there, the nuns starved her and locked her in cupboards. They beat her and forced her to wear soiled clothes on her head if she had an accident. And I mean, like, she went in there when she was 2.
So it looks like people were just being put in there all willy-nilly. It wasn't even, like, the purpose that they had intended for these places. Like,
they were just throwing...
They were throwing everyone in there, it seemed.
The mentally ill, it's people, like, who had nobody to look after them just went in there.
It was, like, people that they didn't have a place already for. They just were like, right, off to laundries, he's gone.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a version of the workhouses. And like, I understood them as mother and baby homes.
Mm.
But like, throughout this, we've mentioned asylum a lot. I didn't realise.
It was originally opened as the Magdalen Asylum for Penitent Women.
Yeah.
So for being a normal woman, human being, basically, and doing absolutely nothing wrong, you were sent to this asylum where you were beaten and emotionally abused and your whole worth was stripped away.
When she was 12, Coppin tried to kill herself and set her clothes on fire. She survived but received no medical treatment.
Jesus.
Oh my God.
When she was 17, she managed to escape, but 3 months later, she was forced by Child Protection Services to go back into the laundries. She was released then 2 years later.
I just don't understand how there was no like investigation done. I suppose.
Because the church was running it.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
The church was running it. Why would you ask any questions? It's the church. That was the outlook that people had then. Mm-hmm. It was like, well, like, why would they do that in Rome?
It's the church.
It's the church.
What is it? God-fearing people.
Yeah. Mm. So a quote from Elizabeth is, "It dawned on me that I would be there for life, that I'd be buried in a mass grave. There were whispers that went around. I saw people who were there, who were broken, institutionalized, illiterate from living in a dark, dark place with no way out. I remember asking myself the questions, what will I do? How will I get out?"
That is so sad.
It's horrific.
It like, really is.
Again, like she was a victim.
A victim. Mm-hmm. Both of them were victims.
And it's like they started out as like, oh, we're going to send all the fucking prostitutes here to be punished. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, we're sending orphans there and victims of abuse there. And anybody who's just out on the street and looks a bit dodgy, go on in there. Like,
so another survivor of the Magdalen Laundries was a woman named Maureen Sullivan. She was sent to the Magdalen Laundries after being abused by her stepfather. So another abuse victim. The priest who was sent by the nuns to get her assured her mother that she would be going to a, quote, lovely school.
Mm-hmm.
Upon her arrival, she was given the name Frances. Her days would start at 6 a.m. and end at 9 p.m. She would have to scrub and polish floors, work in the laundry, and then make rosary beads and knit Aran sweaters. The quote from her is, "What an evil thing to do. I never did any wrong. I was an innocent child, and a nun told me I could trust her to tell her my story. I trusted her, and what a fool I was." I mean, when you look back now, you were brought up then to think that you could trust a nun or a priest, but they did a lot of wrong by me and very many other people. Everything was taken from me. My name, my rights as a child to go out and play with other children, my rights to communicate with other people. Maureen was moved around from laundries in New Ross, Kildare, Athy and Dublin. She was given basically no time with her mother, who was only able to visit her 4 times in 5 years. And when her mother did get to speak to her, she told Maureen she thought it's time she should be getting paid.
Because again, she didn't understand what was going on
behind
closed doors. She thought that she was working and stuff like that. So she's like, why aren't you getting paid?
Getting paid. Maureen said it to the Reverend Mother, and the next morning her case was packed and she was dropped off at Houston Station with a fiver. Dead cheek! Dead cheek! Nun was like, here's your money, bitch.
It's like, oh, this girl's mother's getting wise now that we're using her for free labor. Let's get rid of her. Drop
and
her
here's a fiver
Houston.
For your fucking trouble. Oh my God. Okay. Anyways, at least she was out, right? So Maureen Sullivan said that she left the laundries unable to communicate properly, with low self-esteem and virtually no education.
The next survivor we're going to talk about is Marina Gambold, who was orphaned when she was only 8 years old. She lived with her grandmother for a few years, but by the time she was 16, she found herself with nowhere to go. A priest learned about her situation and took her to the laundries. She said, "I walked up the stairs that day and the nun came out and said, 'Your name has changed. You are Fidelma.' I went in and I was told I had to keep my silence." One day she broke a cup by accident, so the nuns tied a string around her neck and forced her to eat it off the floor.
Excuse me, what?
Yeah.
You wouldn't even treat an animal that way.
No.
Like, you wouldn't even do that to an animal.
No.
Even my dog is getting pissed off and walking away from
she's
the
like,
situation.
Oh, I'm out. I'm not listening to the shit anymore.
She's like, she's you gone. Know what? Fuck this.
She's gone. She never leaves.
No, she just no. walked
she's
out.
She's begging to stay in. She's like, nah.
So for 3 days, that string was tied around her neck and she had to eat off the floor.
Oh my God. Like, look, if I'm laughing throughout this episode at any point, I'm not laughing because I find any of this funny, because it's very clearly not. Like,
it's a laugh at a funeral situation.
Yeah,
so
yeah. Like, I'm laughing because of how uncomfortable I am about hearing all of this.
It's like, if I don't laugh, I'm going to explode with anger. So I'm just going to laugh it off.
And I'm trying to, you know, not get our podcast banned.
So another quote here is, "Then I had to get down on my knees and I had to say, I beg Almighty God's pardon, Our Lady's pardon, my companion's pardon for the bad example I have shown. Another thing I will never forget is the evening I ran out on the balcony, which was all glass, on a winter's night. She locked me out there for 2 nights, me and 2 other girls, and I nearly died of the cold. Marina escaped when she was 17 and fled Ireland. She lived in England for 30 years before returning with her husband."
Like, they are such sad stories. And there's so many survivor stories that are devastating.
And these are the survivors.
Yeah,
imagine.
So you can only imagine the people that never got to tell their story, what they went through.
Yeah.
One of the articles actually that Connell wrote is all about the survivors. It's really good.
Yeah.
If you want to check that one out. The state never regulated the Magdalen laundries, despite using it to dump people for detention, care, or because they just seemed off.
Which is basically what they were doing.
Literally. Yeah.
So, you look a bit dodgy.
Oh, you're a female. Let's just throw you.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what age you are, doesn't matter what circumstances.
No, you are female. Goodbye. Yeah.
You're a female and no one's looking for you. Off you go.
Yeah.
They neglected to do this despite knowing well that women were working for no pay and the age that they were being sent there, and probably more. The IDC visited laundries for inspection from 1957 onwards, but their excuse for not noticing the horror going on behind closed doors was because they were only concerned with machinery and didn't question anything about the women there.
So people actually came in, seen what was happening, but were like, well, I'm here for the machinery, so I'm just gonna turn a blind eye and not say anything.
Like, these women are beaten, sitting in their own filth, probably look exhausted as they're working because they don't really get to sleep very often and their hair is fucked.
Yeah. Like, honestly, it's so fucked up to think that these women would actually have been better off on the streets.
Literally.
Mm-hmm. I don't think they would have even got close to this much abuse on the streets.
No.
Which is a shocking thing in itself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And especially when everybody thinks of Ireland as such a happy place. When, like, this was going on for over 200 years.
And it was all done by the church.
Yeah.
At that. Like, everybody's talk about like, a plot twist.
Irish people are so nice. Nothing bad happens there. It's like, yeah, it does.
Yeah, bro, you clearly haven't heard about all this, but we're here to educate you.
In 1966, the majority of the laundries had been closed, and they weren't nearly as common as before. But make no mistake, they were there.
Mm-hmm.
Knowledge of the laundries across the country was quite mixed. Like, some people still saw them as a place of rehabilitation and others kind of knew about the abuse that was going on, but there was nothing official. Nobody was investigating it. So it was kind of just like common knowledge on the street, you know? So you either knew or you didn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It reminds me of, you know, them Facebook posts, and it's just, there's no context. And it's like, if you know, you know.
Yeah.
The church was basically getting away with it in front of everybody, like right in front of our eyes. That was until the laundry in High Park, Drumcondra, County Dublin, sold a piece of land in 1993. By then, I don't think the place was still considered a laundry. I think it was just a normal convent.
Mm-hmm.
But when the builders came in to dig up some of the land on the property, they discovered a mass grave. There were over 155 bodies buried on the convent ground, most of which had no death certificate. The United Nations got involved almost immediately and started investigating all of the laundries, and it concluded that the victims were, quote, deprived of their identity, of education, and often of food and essential medicines, and were imposed with an obligation of silence and prohibited from having any contact with the outside world. The United Nations, like, that's a big deal, but it took obviously a little bit of time, and within 3 years, they had all been pretty much closed down.
Yeah. And you can imagine how much longer this would have went on, though, if they didn't step in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though the laundries had closed, that didn't stop the horrors that went on in them being exposed. So we mentioned earlier that a lot of the babies born in the laundries were put up for adoption or went to orphanages or mother and baby homes. In 2014, a mass grave of around 800 babies who were under the care of the nuns were found in Galway. Some of the bodies were even found in an old septic tank, which is fucked. Is disgraceful, yeah. The whole thing is disgraceful.
The whole thing is just...
A historian named Catherine Corliss had been researching the children who had died at the orphanage in Galway from 1925 to 1961. She found 797 death records for babies, and only one of them had been buried with their family in a Catholic cemetery.
They were all just unidentified, basically.
Therefore, it was expected that they had been placed in unmarked graves on the grounds of the orphanage. Corliss found that nearly 80% of the babies who had died and were buried there were under 1 year old. The most common causes of death were flu, measles, pneumonia, tuberculosis, and whooping cough. Corliss used her own money to pay for the death certificates of each child that had been buried there.
What a nice woman.
Oh my god. A saint.
But it just goes to show you, a random historian who is researching
has
this
more empathy.
Has more empathy than the Catholic Church, who were known for being charitable and great.
Yeah.
So there were a lot of questions around what exactly happened, and there are different opinions as to if the septic tank was in use or not, or if the children had been baptized or not. To be honest, like, more than likely not, considering just how
and
they were treated.
I know it's a thing, like, if you're not baptized, you can't be buried in a graveyard in on consecrated ground.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I've heard that as well. In 2017, a test excavation was completed, and it was reported that the significant quantities of child remains had been found at the site in Galway. The report included that there were two large burial sites, one of which appeared to be a decommissioned septic tank. The tank was filled with rubble and debris and topped with soil, so that's what indicated it was no longer in use. And the children found were aged from 35 feet a week to 2 or 3 years old.
That's fucked. And it's set, so like, they sad. Think that an awful lot of those babies came from the Magdalene laundries.
Yeah. It was in Tuam. It was on the site of a Magdalene laundry. It was on the outskirts of the land.
Ah, okay. That makes sense.
So this is all explained in the Children of Shame video, which is in the resources. Catherine Corliss said, in Tuam, the nuns just walked away and said nothing about a grave. The county council must have known as well. It wasn't marked, it was just forgotten. It was like these children didn't exist. This is exactly what people are looking for, just the truth and answers. Then children's minister Catherine Zappone said, it was not unexpected, as there were claims about human remains on the site over the last number of years. Up to now, we had rumours. Now we have confirmation that the remains are there and that they date back to the time of the mother and baby home, which operated in Tuam from 1925 to 1961. In 2021, the Irish government finally published its final report on the investigation into the treatment of women and children in mother and baby homes between 1922 and 1998. The report states as follows. Ireland was a cold, harsh environment for many, probably the majority, of its residents during the early half of the period under remit. It was especially cold and harsh for women. All women suffered serious discrimination. Women who gave birth outside of marriage were subject to particularly harsh treatment. Responsibility for that harsh treatment rests mainly with the fathers of their children and their own immediate family. It was supported by, contributed to, and condoned by the institutions of the state and the churches. However, it must be acknowledged that the institutions under investigation provided a refuge, a harsh refuge in some cases, when the families provided no refuge at all.
That pisses me off.
No, fuck that. They would actually be better in a cardboard box on Moore Street at this stage.
Yeah, literally. At the end of the day, yes, families were sending their children there and their family members there because they thought that it was a place of rehabilitation.
It was a good place.
It was being promoted and advertised as a good place for your kids to go and learn how to be moral, not to send your kids to go and be abused and ridiculed and treated like they're not even a person.
Yeah, I'm sure a large chunk of these people probably did come from abusive homes because it was just people discarding them.
Yeah.
But not all of them did. And like Becca said, it was being advertised as rehabilitation. And I'm sorry, but it wasn't a refuge.
No.
Like, they would have been better off just taking the chances, running away, I don't know, hopping on a boat to America or something.
Yep.
You know, like, mm-hmm. anything would have been better than what they went through.
No, I agree.
Henry Street in Dublin is my least favourite place in the entire world, and I would rather live on a box on that street than go to a laundry.
Yeah. That is horrible. And I mean, look, the women that made it on the other side and were able to continue on and live relatively normal lives after this are absolute superheroes in my eyes.
Yeah, legends.
And like, even the children that did manage to like stay in Ireland, like, they knew they were born bastard children.
Either way, Ireland was a very fucked up place. It's still quite a fucked up place, but nowhere near as bad as it was.
No.
And thank God it's not being run by the Catholic Church anymore.
Thank God.
But yeah, that was the Magdalen Laundries. There's also actually a series that came out last year called The Woman in the Wall, and that's about the Magdalen Laundries as well. So you can watch that too. I think it's on BBC Player. I can't remember. I'll link it if I can find it. I can't find a link to the Magdalen Sisters. That was like 2002, so you're going to have to find your own dodgy link for that. Well, thanks so much for listening, and we hope you enjoyed this episode. It always feels weird saying that because...
I know, it's like...
We hope you found this episode interesting.
Yeah, and we made it a bit more fun to listen
as
to.
As fun as it could be.
Yeah, hope you got a bit of a giggle out of it. Even though it's really depressing. We try to like lighten it as much as we can without being disrespectful. So if Anton did come across as disrespectful, we apologize. And until next time.
Bye!